So excited, I don't know about that. So concerned would fit a bit more easily. Bill McDonald is my guest, and he has brought with him some absolutely shocking stories. Not stories, facts. The first part of what he has brought us is absolute fact, and I bet you didn't know. I certainly didn't. Autism is not just on the rise. It's going through the roof, literally going through the roof. Autism, 1996, one birth in 10,000. The year 2000, one birth in 5,000. The year 2006, one birth in 166. What's happening to us? Is it some sort of evolutionary change? Is it some sort of de-evolutionary change? Are the grays involved? Yeah, that's beginning to get out on a limb, but if you look carefully at what's been done during times when human beings have been taken, I'm afraid it fits, doesn't it? Think very hard about what the grays have been said to do to human beings, what they want, what they're after, the genetic experimentation that's been going on. Even cows and other animals have been taken, and the experiments that have gone on. Think hard about it. Think hard about these numbers, and it just may be that Bill, unfortunately, is dead on the money. Bill, you cite the Asian model of corporate culture, de-emphasizing individual initiative over obedience, conformity, the evolving structure of the mammalian primate hive. Well, actually, the Asian model is beginning to change. It was like that, Bill. It's not as much like that anymore. If anything, the Asian culture has begun to move away from the hive mentality. The corporate culture has slowly begun to move away from it. In fact, if you look at Japanese teenagers, they are beginning to rebel in large numbers and becoming rather individualistic. That's a change that has been occurring in Japan. But it's a good model, I guess, when you're comparing it to the numbers you gave me on autism earlier.
Well, that's
Sort of a
wonderful
model.
news, Art, because I haven't been in the Far East since 1994. So it's been a while. I made probably six or seven extended trips from say 1987 through 1994, and a major business deal was destroyed in the Kobe earthquake. And I haven't been back since. So if those changes are occurring, I'm thrilled. Absolutely
Moving
thrilled.
back, though, to the abductees, how did you put all that together? I mean, how did you get from these alarming numbers with autism to the grays? I mean, I can see how you got there. I just kind of want you to explain to the
Well, I've
audience.
interviewed probably over 1,200 people since 1991 who claim to be abducted, and out of those, 248 were stories by people whose stories you couldn't break. People who had a military or an intelligence community pedigree, people who were just down home honest, like Whitley Strieber and Ann Strieber, people who were trustworthy, and people who clearly were not the victims of child sexual abuse, persons who were not psychotic to some degree, people who weren't struggling with combinations of neurosis and depression. And as a result, I then looked at their stories and I compared them to other people's stories, and it was that those 248 stories that then coalesced and, conformed into patterns and trends, which ended up in the illustrations that I've produced over the last 12 to 14 years. And so it was a gradual process, Art. I didn't just wake up and one morning and decide this stuff. This has been going on since 1992 that I've started to see patterns and things that were developing. But when you become the parent of a child who has pervasive developmental disorder and autism spectrum disorder, then these patterns that you've worked with in the UFO community for years suddenly scream at you because you're staring it in the face. It's right there in front of you in your own
Boy,
child.
I hear that. I really hear that, Bill. Lead one toward believing that the human race is moving very quickly, alarmingly fast, toward a disastrous situation.
Well, one wing of it is, and another wing of it's going to end up in, you know, the human version of purgatory, which is what I think the grays are, and another version of it, if we're lucky, a small wing of it will end up like Uri Geller and my wife, and they will end up evolving the way Arthur Clarke had expressed his hopes for at least some of us to, you know, transcend from the ape to the angel. And I believe in all of those possible patterns, and I think that specific populations, you know, have the opportunity to go in those multiple directions. And I think that there will end up being multiple species of humanity again, the way there were in the past, until our particular subspecies wiped out all the others.
But this is happening too fast.
Years.
Too fast, Bill. Is there any way to know or even guess how far in the future these grays are coming to try and correct what obviously became a disaster? Is there any way to know?
Well, yeah, there is. When you take a look at a chimpanzee and you take a look at us, the Human Genome Program has demonstrated that the DNA of Pan troglodytes, which is the bargain basement chimpanzee, you know, like the ones that Jane Goodall takes care of out in Gombe, it's 96.4% identical between our DNA and their DNA.
That's right.
Then there is another species of chimpanzee called Pan paniscus, which is known as the bonobo or the pygmy chimpanzee, and their DNA is almost 98% identical to us. And then you look at, from Pan paniscus, you look at Australopithecus afarensis, where, you know, the new baby was found out in Ethiopia, and you look at Lucy, and you look at the other models of Australopithecus afarensis, which are clearly bridge species between the common chimp ancestor that needed to stand up in the tall grass to not get ambushed by scimitar-toothed cats, and to where we are now. And you're looking at approximately 4 million years. Now, you look at the radical differences in the gray alien's body, and what you're seeing is a primate that's designed for a microgravity environment or a minimalist gravity environment. You're seeing large eyes, which suggests a darkened and artificial environment where there are no sharp edges, because the reason why you and I have eyes that are very small in comparison to our total body mass, Art, is because there are sharp branches and tree limbs and rocks and all kinds of sharp objects that can put an eye out. So nature has evolved eyes to be small. But with these beings, eyes are larger. That means that they're living in artificially constructed environments. They're more protected. Their bodies are reduced in mass. Their brains are enlarged in mass. That suggests microgravity, orbital, or you know, artificial habitats that exist between the stars. The star child that Loy Pai had, everybody who's gone to my website has seen that I am directly opposed to him as far as the star child being of extraterrestrial origin. He brought those skulls to my house. I saw the severely reduced neck attachment points surrounding the entrance where the medulla oblongata plugs into the brain through, you know, from the spinal cord to into the skull. And that told me something that was very profound. I was looking at a human being that had showed a mutation that made it ideal for life on a space station. And so when you look at the gray aliens and you look at us, and assuming the gray aliens came from a primate origin as we do, we're probably looking at beings where their technology is probably about 10,000 years in advance, but where probably up to 2 million years of, you know, time between our stage and their stage.
All right. Well, it doesn't. If they're traveling in time to get back here to correct some genetic malfunction over time, some genetic disaster, then obviously not all of it is de-evolution, because their science has, despite the problems that are growing at an incredibly fast rate right now,
but it is
somehow there have been enough savants apparently who made it to the other side to be traveling in time to get back here to try to do this.
Well, from that standpoint, you're correct, but it's de-evolution because they're no longer able to reproduce. What we're looking at, again, my opinion, based on all information, anecdotal and otherwise, it's come my direction the last 12, 14 years. We're looking at, and as you know, other researchers have disagreed with me, but I think the majority of the gray aliens, especially the ones of extraterrestrial or non-terrestrial origin, I believe that they are all completely sterile females, that there are no males.
Hey, Bill, you mentioned earlier the trouble with Y chromosome, right?
Exactly. It's
okay.
All
well, I read a story in the first hour. More and more animals, more and more creatures, for example, the Komodo lizard, are becoming suddenly able to have what we regard as virgin births.
Yeah. Now, Art, that's been known in fish and frogs forever. Most lizard herpetologists, those are diapsid animals, which are your birds and your lizards, many of the herpetologists will tell you that is not unknown in lizards.
Well, that's right.
As well.
No, but nature finds a way.
Absolutely. Nature does. But what I'm going to suggest is that several things. First of all, we can't really compare the lizard situation to the humanoid or the primatoid situation.
I know.
And the reason why is because sexual diversification in lizards and in reptiles is not the same as it is in humans. A Y chromosome,
fair enough,
determines the X and the Y chromosomes determine sex based upon whether your male or your female sex cells in the male, you know, you and I, determine the sex of your little baby that's coming and my children that I already have. Mm-hmm. And it's not that way with the reptiles and the birds and the dinosaurs. Temperature of the eggs in the nests determines whether you have more males or more females with crocodiles and birds. And
no, my overall point was that nature finds a way. And if the Y chromosome eventually breaks down, though we certainly might not see scientifically how it could occur today, I imagine nature would find a way.
Well, nature finds a way in their case. Intellectually, they learned how to replicate organisms and how to infuse fresh DNA from compatible species. They found an artificial way to extend themselves several thousand generations, however many generations they need in order to build the heirs, which are the hybrids that will replace them, who will inherit their technologies and their artificially intelligent vehicles that these beings have to be able to interface with. You know, there's another whole wing of my theory that goes off into how they navigate across the stars and how they warp drive their way here. And it requires artificial intelligence. Doesn't work, according to the guys I've talked to in Silicon Valley, unless you can figure out a way to distribute the processing in order to achieve convergent solutions, in order to affect a prescribed emergent behavior. In order to do that in such a way that the system doesn't break down, the suggestion is that you need multiple brain nodes, multiple processors, and the ideal candidates is the flight crew themselves. Organic beings become the multiple processors that interface directly with the artificial cortex and the operating system and the flight control systems of their starcraft.
Well, I hate to say it, but all this does fit together for me.
Now, I think autistics are. Can you imagine them as star pilots, especially with the behavioral characteristics that they show?
I can.
They would be the perfect people. And I don't know if you remember Larry Niven's story. There was two of them that he wrote about a guy who was cybernetically interfaced to a spacecraft, and he went to Venus, and he went to Mercury. He was becalmed in hell, and he was in one very cold environment and one very hot environment, and he was interfaced directly with the spacecraft. Now, what I'm suggesting is that Larry Niven actually got it right, that someday some astronauts who are destined to be helmsmen will be interfaced with their spacecraft permanently, and that the navigators will be remote viewers, Art, especially if you're jumping to hyperspace or dropping to subspace or folding space, because computers are not going to be able to crunch the kind of numbers, and sensors are not going to be able to observe gravity wells the same way in hyperspace that they do in normal four-dimensional spacetime. So I'm suggesting that the only way for these people to get where they want, when they want, and in the correct dimension is going to be if the navigators are remote viewing the course and the course corrections, and the pilots are then, you know, initiating the space fold.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill, before I'd turn over my navigation of something doing that speed to a remote viewer, I'd have to have a lot more confidence in the a percentage of reliability of remote viewers.
Well, I've talked to Hal Puthoff. You've heard me use his name before, and I have his permission to. But I've run all of these concepts and ideas by him on numerous occasions as I was putting together my Oasis Earth Hypothesis manuscript. And what ended up happening was I gave Hal and I gave Eric Davis. These people are Eric has been a guest of yours and George's before. And I gave them a chance to take me to the woodshed. And to this day, they have not. And that makes me feel real good, especially considering that I'm a detective and not a physicist. I'm a detective and not a geneticist. I am a detective and not a physician. But I'm the father of an autistic child, and I have 248 abductees that depended upon me to understand what they were trying to convey to me, experiences that terrified them, experiences that for the majority were negative. There were a few that found the experiences nurturing. There were a few that feel lucky to have been, you know, involved in, you know, contact. But the majority would have preferred not to. The majority don't want to go on TV. They don't want
that's
me
right.
releasing their names.
No,
they don't
want
right. to get
I,
famous.
I know. Have you run all this by a geneticist?
I have spoken with several people at the University of Arizona and in Tempe, ASU actually, Arizona State University. I've run it by a couple of people, including a roommate. I used to live with a biogenetic researcher, a temporary one-year arrangement way back when in the early 90s before I met my wife. And they found my concepts fascinating. They weren't, you know, anti, you know, the information that I was conveying. They had some problems with it because at that time the human genome had not been sequenced. A lot has changed since the Europeans and the Americans did their separate, you know, gene sequencing and, you know, the completion of the human genome program in 2003. And suddenly a lot of the ideas that I had back in the 90s are believable now. They're you know, now they've gone beyond the realm of fantasy and into the realm of possibility. And so I'm feeling more confident, not less, in my opinions.
Have there been any responses from geneticists to these alarming autism numbers?
Well, now, there again, we got a problem. You know how you should hear, you know, more microbiologists yelling and screaming because of the unusual attrition in their rates, but you don't. Geneticists, for some reason, they keep their mouths shut. You don't hear a lot from them. And I think that probably it has to do with tenure and them getting a regular paycheck.
Yeah. Here we are again. Listen, Bill, hold tight. We're at a break point. We always come down to that, don't we? Somebody's research not getting out to the public. Why? Because they're worried about tenure. Understandably, they're worried about feeding their family. They're worried about their careers. And I guess some science just doesn't make it into the social fabric because it's too damn scary. But if these numbers are correct, and I have every reason to believe they are, we should all be scared to death. Hello, everybody. Good day. This one is really, really scary. There's, for example, I went to, somebody sent me a little link, and here I am. The advent of a possible autism epidemic has become a concern in many communities around the globe as the number of reported cases of autism has increased dramatically over the past decade. Members of the medical and scientific community are generally quite skeptical about characterizations of the increasing numbers as indicators of an epidemic. They're worried about using that word. These scientists attribute the dramatic raise in autism rates to more effective and inclusive diagnostic criteria and detection tools. Now, that's worth asking about, and in a moment, we'll ask Bill McDonald about that. Nobody is arguing with these numbers. I'm sorry to say, it's absolutely true. Once again, so that if you just joined the program, you understand what we're talking about. Autism, in 1996, 1 in 10,000 in the population became autistic. In the year 2000, 4 years later, it was 1 in 5,000. In other words, doubled. And now in the year 2006, it's 1 in 160. Six, and they're afraid to use the word epidemic, my God. And what they say further down in this article I'm reading is, authors have speculated, important word, that genetic causes, pollution, food additives, or childhood vaccinations may play roles. It is clear, however, that at least some part of the rise is due to diagnosis because of increased screening. Now, Bill, I'd like you to comment on that. We covered everything else, the pollution, the food additives, the vaccinations, the mercury. But what about simply, I can't imagine in a million years that better screening could account for these kinds of numbers. Can you?
Well, that has been brought up to me a number of times over the last several years. And, you know, it's a reasonable inference because let's see, how can I put this? As people moved from rural to urban environments and as economies changed from industrial, from agrarian, you know, which is, you know, the culture of growing food, to industrial, which is, you know, manufacturing, and then the internet came along, people started to recognize, you know, varying degrees of mental illness and varying degrees of behavioral disabilities and personality disorders to a greater degree, especially in a more concentrated population. The other thing that was brought up to me is that when you are in a more concentrated population and as population density increases, that in essence creates and exasperates, you know, much lesser problems. It causes, you know, the proverbial infection of an already existing wound. It causes mental illnesses and personality disorders to fester in far more dramatic ways than if these persons were, you know, living out in the more rural communities. And there has to be some truth in that because my college degree was in criminal justice, and you know my interest was deviant psychology and biosociology. That was something that, you know, I went to school for, and I applied those backgrounds as a private investigator working undercover and in some very dangerous assignments. And I saw the truth of what I had been taught in college. And that statement, you know, makes a lot of sense. The problem is the degree of the exponential degree of the explosion of autism. It's just,
yes,
it's way out of proportion to cancer, and it's way out of proportion to other types of mental illness.
I completely agree.
And Art, it's way out of proportion to the one mental illness that is in 80% of everybody's families, and that is depression. It's way out of proportion even to depression. Now, just because we're comparing it statistically to depression, don't get the idea that autism is a mental illness. There are changes in the brain that can be measured by MRIs. And some people like to call it a disorder, and some people like to call it a syndrome. But these are actual physical connectivity changes in the brain. Mm-hmm. Nerve structures are de-emphasized in portions of the brain, especially concerning the left parietal lobes and the neocortex on the left side. And they tend to be more emphasized on the right side in most autistics. Now, that can be reversed, especially if they're left-handed instead of right-handed. The amygdala is affected, and as you know, there are people who are, you know, very heavily into, you know, exploring, you know, the amygdala and what it can do, you know, as
yes.
far as
oh,
their
I know.
Lifestyle and their mindset is concerned.
Right.
You have an amygdala guy that's a regular guest of George's. The problem, again, is the statistics. These kids are popping up faster. I just got some incredible emails. I am answering my emails as I talk on the radio. I've got a PC on one side of me and a laptop on the other. And what's going on right now is I've got people that I haven't talked to in almost 10 years, very dear friends, and they know who they are, who are just now sharing with me that their child is suffering from, you know, delayed development and, you know, stuff related to autism spectrum disorder and pervasive, you know, developmental disability. And they're connecting it directly to deep PT shots that their children received as infants. I have another person, an expert, a physician, who's telling me about all the pesticides that are being sprayed in the forests and farmlands of Oregon right now
yeah.
because of the lack of regulation in Oregon, and that they are there is a movement in the state of Oregon trying to directly connect the explosion of autism with the amount of pesticides that are getting sprayed.
And your theory is electromagnetic radiation. Well, look, it's one of these
things.
Well,
the internet is everywhere, and television is everywhere where the spraying is. And so there's really no way at this point to prove or disprove either theory. There's no way.
Again, these are such alarming numbers, Bill, that the fact that it has not been more of there hasn't been more serious front page type scientific reporting on this is, I mean, I've got to hear it from Bill McDonald on Coast to Coast AM.
Well, I'm not the first one to report it, though.
I'm sure you're not.
Daryl Sims did an interview, and I don't remember if it was with you or George, but it was his last most recent interview, and he stated at that time that he is directly researching the correlation between autism and alien abduction. Now, he did not go into a whole lot of detail on the show about that, and when I called him up, he shared information with me which he would prefer that I not speak, you know, in regards to, because it's his research. And what I want to do is give him credit for actually going public with that first. I've been believing in this connection for a long time, and then it became shockingly apparent to me when I suddenly discovered that I was the parent of an autistic child.
Mm-hmm.
But Daryl, you know, he was the first one to go public on that. So we have to acknowledge that Daryl has been doing research in this area.
Well, that's fine. But whether it's you or it's Daryl, it's not the New York Times front page. It's not the CBS Evening News lead story.
Why isn't Katie Couric doing something with this? She
exactly.
has this free speech segment. I'll be happy to, you know, sit there and talk about this for, you know, 40 seconds. I would love to do the free speech segment, you know, on Katie Couric's broadcast.
I mean, when it gets down to one in 166 births, it's a change in all of humanity, Bill, that requires more than just Bill McDonald or anybody else you've named. It requires international attention.
Chinese news organizations are starting to share information on autism in China.
Really?
And that's a shocker considering, you know, how very quiet they always are regarding anything negative related to their culture.
That's true. The only reason this makes so much sense with the abduction, the whole abduction thing, we've always wondered, what is this about? Why are they curious about our emotions? Why are they curious about our genetics? Why are they experimenting on us? And the problem with all this is it answers all of that.
Well, the replication process requires infusions of fresh DNA art, because exactly. Otherwise, if you're just doing clones of clones of clones, it's the same problem as if I take one of my original pieces of artwork and I do a Xerox of it, and then I do a Xerox of that Xerox, and then a Xerox of that Xerox, and a Xerox of that Xerox. Information starts to drop out, and at some point, that genome becomes non-viable. Mm-hmm. So the infusion of fresh DNA and, the filling in of those portions of the DNA code that drop out is critical. Gene sequencing with each new generation is absolutely hypercritical, because otherwise you're going to end up with a virus, a tumor, or, a lump of, aborted flesh rather than, the little person that you're trying to, breed through artificial means. Replication is as far beyond cloning as, ham radio is beyond a child's crystal radio set.
Bill, is there any indication at all that the government, though not publicly saying anything, is very well aware of this and on top of it in some way that we're not being told about? Yes?
Yes. The Department of Health and Human Services, autism is one of the number one things at the cabinet level. The problem, again, is budget. You can't pour the kind of money into autism that you'd like to when you're fighting a war on terrorism. And I don't want anybody to get the idea that I'm leaning, toward liberal persuasion. If we don't keep sending our boys overseas, it's going to be our shopping malls where the suicide bombers turn up, because I have, documentation of fatwas where they're planning on killing Americans because they want to do it in cities where American industry produces pornography, where American women get naked, where television is produced. They're not going to stop. They're not going
to stop. Good luck, Hollywood.
Yeah, they are not going to stop. As long as there is a Las Vegas, an Atlantic City, a Hollywood, and a porn industry big in Los Angeles, New York, and Hong Kong, they're not going to stop. And it's a religion of it's our way or death. And so, autism has to take a back burner to war. Unfortunately for us parents, we're not getting any respite, and that's where private corporations and church organizations need to pick up the ball. A lot of the democratic agenda could be carried by church organizations and private industry, and they could use it in their advertising if for no other reason, and they could do a lot of good and help out a lot of people and let the government maintain its primary business of protecting us. And, that in a nutshell is my politics. But the situation, why is it not in the New York Times? Mm. Right now there is no political advantage to any candidate wanting on either side of the aisle to talking about autism, because there's no money for autism. There's not going to be any money for autism. Autism... In order to explore and possibly even influence autism, they'd have to spend all of the money that they're putting into the NASA budget to go to the moon into autism, and they still might not get anywhere. Bill Gates and all those people are about to put a ton of money, billions upon billions upon billions of dollars into research on AIDS. And what's going to happen? No sooner are they going to get done figuring out how to vaccinate people against the A variant and the B variant and the C variant of HIV, all of a sudden the D variant and the E variant are going to pop up out of Africa, and the new versions of this replicatable virus are going to once again you know, start preying upon our species, which is massively overpopulated anyway, because I believe that that's part of the natural scheme of things. That's how Earth maintains her checks and balances. You know, get too many rabbits in Australia, and all of a sudden the rabbits get sick from disease, and massive portions of the population die off.
Bill, do you think autism is part of that same chain?
It's hard to tell, because some of the most incredible musicians on the planet, who are also the most antisocial, are clearly autistic.
Oh, and yes.
Guys like
yes,
Bill
Gates. I'm just saying, you just gave us some pretty good examples of Mother Nature saying, there's too many of you here, and so we're going to keep coming up with variants of things that kill. I understand that.
It's a mutation.
Well, we don't think it's a virus. We don't know. We don't even know that, do we?
You know, you're absolutely right. But it looks like a mutation. It looks more like a mutation than anything. It's like that Starchild skull that Lloyd Pye's got. It looks more like a mutation than anything else.
Okay, but we don't know what it is. I mean, you recited, I thought, a pretty good example of one effect of overpopulation, and that is AIDS, which compromises the human immune system, and it continues to morph faster than we can come up with ways to slow it down.
Yeah, but autistics are well able to reproduce. I mean, I'm barely touched by it, but, you know, I mean, I can get a lady pregnant at the drop of a hat. Autistic people can reproduce. If anything, they might be less responsible in their reproduction than you know, others.
Mm-hmm.
So
autism is genetically passed on. We know that for certain, or not?
Well, again, all the research indicates that there is a parental heritage or heritage along the patrilineal line in many families. However, autism also occurs spontaneously in families where there is no known history. Now,
it would have to, with those kinds of numbers that you've cited, and you are correct about, it would have to.
Right now, you're probably going to get a ton of emails that are going to say, yes, there is an absolute family history. And you're also going to get a ton of emails that say, yes, it occurs spontaneously in families. And it's going to be true in both cases. Like, for instance, we look at my father, we look at my great-grandfather and my grandfather, and yeah, they were clearly autistic. We look at my older son, and he's an extremely high-functioning Asperger and probably the most well-liked child I've ever seen in my life. Every adult on the planet adores that boy. Then there's my younger son, Michael, and he's the one who is so difficult to deal with. I go to Walmart, a little old lady says, hi, little boy, and she goes to stroke his cheek, and he spits in her eye. Then that woman's son follows me out into the parking lot, telling me that I'm training my son to spit the way an organ grinder trains a monkey, threatening to beat me up. So then I get ready to, you know, get into a fight, and the security guards jump in and save the day. But, I mean, you know, that is one of the situations that I have to deal with as a parent. You know, my little son won't wear clothes. You know, it got cold here in Arizona all of a sudden. You know, it was like 58 degrees and then 55 degrees in the daytime, and he was pulling off his shirt. And the fellow Christmas shoppers were looking at my wife like she was the worst mother ever.
Yeah,
and they have no clue what we have to go through. This kid won't wear clothes.
I know.
So, you know.
This is all incredibly alarming, and too much of this is making sense to me. It's going to be very interesting, Bill, to see what the audience has to say about this. We've covered a lot of the potential ground for what this could be. So that's exactly what we're going to do. If it's okay with you, Bill, when we come back, as we normally do.
But I also want to announce tonight about the big black triangle sighting. Are you willing to do that as well?
Oh, of course. We'll get to that as we come back.
Because it turns out, Art, you're not a liar.
Well, of course I'm not a liar.
No, I mean, my point is, you know, my whole paradigm has changed.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that when we come back, and then we'll go to the phones with Bill McDonald. If this hasn't been a night to light up your brain, then... Well, maybe there's been a little too much Christmas cheer. I'm Art Bell.